You are listening to The Black Landscape with Andrea Spearman, where Black excellence is always trending. Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Andrea Spearman, and this is The Black Landscape, where we engage with emerging and established Black leaders here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to leave a review of the show on Apple Podcasts or in the comments of our social media. So I'm Andrea, and today, well, always, I'm a light-skinned Black woman with my dark brown curly hair up in kind of a half updo style. And today I'm wearing my black and brown glasses with a purple t-shirt. And we're here with our special, special guest, Toni Rochelle, aka Pretty Toni. Hey, girl.
Hey. Thank you for having me on. I'm so excited.
Yes. Toni, please describe yourself to the people.
Let's see. She's 5'3". I guess I'm not chocolate because people be telling me I'm not chocolate. So I'll consider myself maybe a caramel dark chocolate girl. Today I have straight hair with a side part. Yes, yes, yes. And I'm wearing a white collar shirt buttoned down, and I'm wearing black slacks and some alligator heels.
Ooh, come on, alligator.
They're not real alligator though. They're the fake ones, but they still cute.
That's all right. So animal conscious. We love it.
Yes.
Toni and I met several years ago over at Laney College, and she's just always been this beautiful spark of sunshine and light.
Aww. And so
we want to start at the beginning, though. So tell us about where you grew up and how you came here to the Bay Area.
Ooh, child. She went up from the beginning. Hey, Bay Area. It's Toni Rochelle, a.k.a. Pretty Toni, like she said. I wasn't always Pretty Toni, but I'm originally from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I have been in the Bay Area for 20 years now, this year. I moved here when I was 21 years old, and I wanted to become an actress. And when I got here, everybody kept telling me how pretty I was. And it was a shock to me because I never really thought that I was really pretty like that. You know, I thought I was okay, average or whatever, but Oakland, California named me Pretty Toni. To be specific, a guy named Rockefeller named me Pretty Toni. Shout outs to Rock for that. I didn't know that the name was going to go so far. And I was like, isn't that kind of like, that's kind of being conceited or something, ain't it? Like, I don't think I should be calling myself Pretty Toni. And then on top of that, I didn't know that it was a pimp's name or, you know, I didn't know none of that. I didn't know that. So I'm like 21, super naive and gullible. And
fresh.
You know, fresh to death, you know, coming to California thinking I was grown. You know, I grew up in the foster care system since I was 8 years old, and I aged out of the system when I was 18. And so once I turned 21, I came to Black Ski Weekend at Tahoe out here, and I got a taste of Oakland, California. And then I went to San Francisco, and I went home and I told everybody, I said, I'm moving to California. Like, I'm moving to California. Now, I didn't know that I really should have went to LA because of Tupac. Tupac made it seem like, well, to me, he made it seem like Oakland and LA was so close together, even though they are. But they're not, you know, now that I live here. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to Hollywood. I didn't know that I was going to the Bay Area. And when I got here, like, I was culturally shocked. I had never seen so many Asians in my entire life. I thought California was going to be sunny and warm. There was bridges and tall buildings and hills and mountains and stuff. Where I come from is very flat. It was just the parking on the streets was crazy. I got so many parking tickets the first year I lived here. It was expensive. Like, I had like maybe $2,500 when I came here. Me, my car, my Christmas tree, a couple of luggage. And I thought I was rich. I thought I had it going on.
Not the Christmas tree.
No, I have a thing about Christmas trees. I'll tell you about that if you want to know. But yeah, so I came here and I was just on a dream. I really wanted to be an actress. I thought I was going to be this big movie star, you know, be in sitcoms and things like that. And when I got here, they had this audition for modeling. And so a couple of people was like, you should go and do, you know, be in the fashion show, be a model. And I was like, I've never done nothing like that. Like, I don't, and I'm short, and I have been watching like Top Model and stuff. And so I didn't think that I could be a model because I'm only 5'3". And so I went to a model audition call and they had the nerves to hire me. And let me tell you, I did not know how to walk. I didn't know how to like do the catwalk or anything like that. So I was literally fresh to death. A week later, I met this man named Chauncey Bailey. He was a journalist. Shout outs to him and rest in peace to him. Mm-hmm. And so when I met him, he was like, you are beautiful. And I was like, really? Like, people just kept telling me that. And I didn't really digest it. He was like, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, I want to be a movie star. Like, I want to be an actress. And he was like, yeah. He was like, you got the spark. He was like, you are a star. He was like, you're going to go very far. Like, you got to do this. And he was like, I'm going to hook you up with this TV station. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got to meet Rock, a.k.a. Rockefeller. And he had a TV station called VJTV. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the studio. He handed me this mic. He was like, yeah, we're going to call you Pretty Tony. And I'm like, wait, what? What's going on? And he's like, you're going to be a host and you're going to have your own show. And you're going to talk about music and fashion and entertainment. And I'm like, what? I don't know how to do that. Like, what are you talking about? And so the next day they like did this photo shoot. Like, it was my very first photo shoot. And they had me wear like this, this one piece bodysuit. It was real skanky. It showed all my goodies. Okay. And so I was like, I just kind of rode with it. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And the next day I came back to the studio, they had this huge poster of me, Drea. Like, it was huge. It was like, wow. I don't know the square footage, but I'm telling you, that thing was so big. Like, as soon as you walked in, it was like, bam. And I was like, oh my God. I was amazed how big it was, but I was amazed how good it looked. And I had this mic in my hand and I really looked like I knew what I was doing, even though I didn't. And but I just kind of like, and then when they gave me the mic, it was kind of like a freestyle kind of. And I like just found my niche. I held onto that microphone and I just started talking. And I was like, ooh, this feels good. And I planted my 2 feet down and I was like, this is where I want to be. I thought I wanted to be an actress, but this is lovely, you know? And so that was when the magic started for me. And so from there, I just started doing like fashion shows. I didn't know how to walk, like I said. So I got trained by this lady named Marla. And she's like the best walker in the whole Bay Area. She still models to this day. The woman is fine. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He said, go in that hallway and keep on walking, keep on, you just keep going. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't think I can do this. But I went out there and I practiced. And there was a couple other girls out there that I met and they couldn't walk either. So I wasn't alone.
Mm-hmm.
Just started doing fashion shows. And then from there, I started doing like music videos. People started hiring me to be in their videos. And then I started being in magazines. And then from there, I mean, I had my TV show with VJTV. And what happened was I didn't end up staying with VJTV for so long. I ended up getting recruited from another TV station called RTV.
Mm.
And so that's when the magic really, really happened. And so I started working for RTV and they gave me a show called Off the Hook TV. And so if you can think of like, do you remember 106 and Park?
Yes.
So it was like a baby minister 106 in Park. And so we would go to all the parties in the Bay Area and we would like record the, this is before social media too, by the way. So I'm telling my age. So we was recording the parties and stuff and we were interviewing the celebrities that was the local celebrities that was here, the party promoters. And it was fun. It was so much fun. Like, we got to party and interview and look cute. Like, it was just, it was all of that to me.
It was
like,
a full deal.
We was going to Kimball's. We was going to Club 17. We was
Okay.
Yeah. That's how old. Yes. Jack London Square was popping back in the day.
Right.
I can't even think of the name of the other clubs, because if I did, you would crack up. Hopefully it'll come back to me. But Sweet Jimmy's, like, we were going to all the
Lord.
It was cracking up.
Showing our age.
It was cracking, and but we were the media at the time. Mm-hmm. We were the media, and people knew. People started to find out who I was, and like people were treating me like a celebrity and stuff. And then they got me like 3 big billboards in Oakland. I got one off of Havens Court, and then I had one off of High Street, and then I had one other location I can't remember at the top of my head. But I was really doing something out here, you know?
Yeah, you were, sis. You were.
And then to make it even more magical, I started going to Laney College. And because I didn't give up on my dream as being an actress, because the modeling kind of just fell in my lap. The hosting just kind of like was given to me. But I had to work for the acting. When I enrolled into college at Laney College, I had no business doing that. Growing up in the foster care system, I remember being 17, 18, graduating high school, and I remember, and this is in Oklahoma City, and I remember everybody like getting ready to go to college. And those colleges out there was like Langston University, Gremlin, you know, OU, Texas A&M, like people were going to college. And I actually wanted to be a writer. Mm. And I remember 2 weeks before I graduated, I had asked my counselor, I said, you know, I see everybody's getting ready for college and stuff. And I said, well, you know, what am I going to do when I get out of high school? And just to paint the picture, this is an old white man that's a counselor, and I loved him.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't going to even say his name. That may not be right. But, you know, I always had respect for him. But this day I lost a lot of respect for him, because I went into his office and I said, well, can you help me get ready to go to college? Because I want to be a writer. And I wanted to go to the school in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I can't think of it, but it was a big writing college. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, Tony, you're very beautiful. He said, you should just marry rich, because you'll never be able to go to college.
Sir. Yeah. Sir.
He said that to me. And so I was like, well, why? Why wouldn't I be able to go to college? And he said, well, you know, your grade point average is not good. And, you know, you're not a good reader, and you can't spell, and you don't know how to talk very well.
Rude.
So I kind of was like, wow. So then I asked my caseworker, I asked her, can you get me prepared and ready for college? And she told me the same thing. And she was also a white lady, an older white lady. Mm-hmm. So then I asked another member of the foster care people, because one thing about me, I was in a special foster care. I was the ward of the state, but I was also a good kid. So I was in a program called the KC Family Program, which is a unique company, like where if you're a good kid, like you get to be in this program, you have to be accepted. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot more benefits than the regular kids that's just in the custody and you know, in the system. So 3 people told me that I'll never go to college. And so I think one of them might have told me to go to the military, because I was in ROTC in high school. So I had my mind made up that I will never be able to go to college. But I said, when I got to Oakland, I said, I'm going to go to college. Like, I don't even know what made me want to go, what prompted me. I can't remember to this day, but I enrolled in Laney College. My major was theater arts. / communications. And I didn't even know what communications was, but I really just was there for the theater arts portion. I had never had a theater background, because I didn't do anything like that in high school. I didn't know what a monologue was, a script, or anything like that. I just had a dream of, like, you know, being an actress. So I enrolled in theater. I think it was introduction to theater. And there was this director. Well, he's a director now at Laney, but at the time he was just a teacher. And so for whatever crazy reason, this man pre-cast me for 2 roles in a play. Now, I didn't even really know what that meant, because, you know, this is my first time doing this. Like, you know, now that I do know, the process is to audition and then you get the role. But for whatever reason. Okay, here come the tears again. He had the nerves to pre-cast me for 2 roles in the same play. And I'm over here freaking out because in my mind, I can't read. I can't talk. Like, how am I going to really do this? Like, I know I'm here. I did this to myself. I signed up and I'm actually in class. And the nerve of me to get pre-cast. Like, he doesn't even know me. I don't even know myself. How can he do this to me? So I was kind of angry, afraid, scared, terrified.
Listen.
So for those of you that don't know the process of when you do get casted into a play, most of the time you do something called a table read. Mm-hmm. And so you sit at the table and you read the play. Now, mind you, the other people were still getting, they hadn't even auditioned for the role. So we're just doing a reading. But I had already been pre-cast. Okay, pre-cast for two roles. So I am freaking out. I am sweating. I don't even sweat. I really don't sweat. Okay, so I was sweating. I was a nervous wreck. I was scared. I wanted to find the first exit to like run, you know, because I'm a runner. You know, that's one thing I used to do is run away from stuff, you know, especially my problems. Mm. So I was trying to figure out my escape. But I couldn't because I don't know what happened. I couldn't even run because I was too scared. I couldn't move. So we at the table, Drea, and we start to read. Let me tell you. Every other word I was stumbling over. I didn't know what the word was. I didn't know how to pronounce it. It was terrible. I couldn't wait till he said break time. So as soon as he said break time, we all went break, and that's when I heard the noises, the sounds. Is she stupid or something? She can't even read. How the heck he gonna precast her and she don't even know how to read? She doesn't even know what that word is and this word is. And, you know, she's pretty, but she doesn't know how to read. She don't deserve. This is what I'm hearing in the hallway from my peers. So I go in the bathroom and I cry. And I'm asking the Lord to just get me out of this situation because this was a big mistake. And for whatever reason, the Spirit was like, no, you go back and sit at the table. So I went back and sat at the table and I pretty much just started crying. And I was like, I don't think I can do it. And I did this in front of everybody. Like, I don't think I can do this. You know, people were talking about me and I'm not really a good reader. And the teacher was like, well, who was talking about you? Who did this and who did that?
Right.
And that moment, I was like, wow, somebody cares about me. Like, you really wanted to know, like, who said that and who made you feel this way? And you're not quitting. You got precast for this for a reason. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't even have to tell them who told them because some of my classmates told them. So that one particular person was kicked off the cast. She was dismissed from the table.
Dismissed.
Yeah. And and the rest is history. So I went home and remember we didn't have iPhones and Google and all that at the time. So I went home and I read that script over and over and over. And I got my dictionary out and I looked up the words and like I don't even know how I still did it. I worked hard and I slept, eat, pooped, everything with that script.
Right.
I did. I read that script probably 5,000 times. And then I would just, you know, if I didn't know a word and I didn't know how to pronounce it, I would remember it from something else to remind me what the word was. And this was all me teaching myself at the time. And every week we went to rehearsal, I just got better and better and better and better. And then we performed that play and I thought I was all of that. Because if you know anything about theater, it's like you either got it or you don't got it. Mm-hmm. If you mess up, the only people that know you mess up is your cast. You can't just be like, oh, cut. It's not like TV. You got to keep going and your castmates is relying on you. So all these people are relying. I had two leading roles in the play, Drea. So I had to, not that I had to carry the whole play, but I had a responsibility, you know? And so for me to be able to get through that, I was like, okay, I can do this. You know, I can really do this. Like, wow, like I'm not stupid. No. You know, I'm not dumb.
Mm-mm.
I can really be an actress if I want to. I know how to get through a script. And it was just amazing. And from there, after that, I just started learning monologues like on my own, just getting them under my belt, reading them and dissecting them. And I didn't care about nothing else no more but acting.
Tony, you are amazing. And you have really just described the definition of self-determination.
Thank you so much.
Them people told you no, but spirit said yes. Go forth.
And, you know, I like the word that you use, but the word that I like to use and you know I like to use is ascending.
Yes.
Because I was ascending when I didn't even know I was ascending. I didn't even know what that word meant when I first heard that word. But just sitting here telling my story, like, that's exactly what I did. I didn't stay stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
From there, things just started going great. Like, with the TV show, I started going to, like, the BET Awards, the ASCAP Awards. I started doing red carpet. I have had the pleasure of interviewing tons of celebrities, anywhere from Smokey Robinson to Bobby Brown to Jay Holiday to Music Soul Child. The list goes on. And I figured out, like, I'm really, you know, I wasn't born with a talent. You know, I don't know how to sing naturally. I don't know how to do hair or you know, something like that. But I found my it thing. I can hold a mic. I can act.
That is your talent. That is your talent. That is your talent. You're charming. You're warm. People want to talk to you. That is the talent.
I know that now. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Drea.
Yes. And, you know, I love that word ascending, too. And we're going to come back in just a moment and continue to talk about ascending and Tony's platform. But right now we're going to take a short break to catch up on the previous episodes of The Black Landscape. Download on Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout, and Google Podcasts. When we come back, we'll hear more from Tony Rochelle. We're back with Tony Rochelle. Let's talk about ascending. What is this platform?
It's my baby. It is a platform that has saved my life. I would say maybe about 7 years ago, I went through a divorce and I was suicidal. I was depressed. I was ready to just drive off the bridge, me and my two kids. And I just felt stuck. And angry and mad and miserable. And I was wilding out. I was drinking, smoking, just cutting up in these streets, okay? Mm-hmm. And I actually ended up in jail. And
we're keeping it 100 authentic right 100. Now.
For you, yeah. And I had been drinking like Hennessy every day and I don't even drink. The Lord spoke to me while I was in jail and he was like, if you keep on acting out like this, you're going to die. Because I was like, I was not even eating at this point. I was really killing myself slowly. And when I went to jail, all these girls was like, what are you doing here? You so beautiful and everything. And da 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 da. I was like, beauty is nothing. You know, like that doesn't mean nothing. And it was like, but you're a square. Like you don't belong here. Like, Don't let us ever see you back here. Because I was in there with prostitutes and murderers and all kind of people that just, you know. And so the Lord was like, yeah, you need to get up out of here. And I started hearing all these girls' stories and I was in tears. And so as soon as I got back to the Bay, because I was out of state when I went to jail, I went to church. Shout out to Treva Reed. I don't know if you know her. She's a community activist. Pillar in our community in Oakland, California. She actually ran for mayor this year. I didn't know her at the time. And I went up to her and she prayed for me and my two kids. And I actually ended up getting the Holy Ghost, something that I had never got. I've always had a relationship with the Lord, but I had never been to the extent of like getting the Holy Ghost or anything like that. So long story short, I got the Holy Ghost. I actually spoke in tongues that day too. I had never done nothing like that before in my life. So all these spiritual things was happening to me, and I was Persian. And for those of you that don't know what Persian is, meaning I was throwing up. Mm-hmm. I was literally throwing up. I was getting all the junk that was inside of me. It was coming out of me, out of my pores, everything. And the Lord said, what you need to do is you need to help the people. And I was like, help the people? I can't even help myself. What are you talking about?
Listen.
And he was like,
he don't call the qualified. He qualifies the called.
I thought the man was crazy, honestly. I said, okay, God, if you bad and bougie, what do you want me to do? Like, I don't get it. Like, what? And he was like, you need to get back to acting and modeling and getting back to your stuff, your craft. Mm. And I was like, I don't want to be looking cute and being in people's faces and doing all this stuff. So I had logged back onto this website called San Francisco Casting. Mm-hmm. And mind you, it cost to be on there. And I think I only had like $25 in my account at the time. And it was like $17 a month. So I still went on faith. I logged onto the thing. And first thing I seen was this Honda commercial. Mm. And so I applied for the Honda commercial. And can you believe it that I got the call? Now, when I got the call for the audition, I knew that I was going to get it. Like, I knew. So they cast me for the commercial. It wasn't for a big role. It was supposed to be for a backstage role. But when I got there, they kept moving me up. They put me in the front so I could be seen more. The next thing they know, like, oh, we're gonna give you some speaking roles. They gave me one line. And the next thing I know, they gave me three lines. Mind you, this also happened on my birthday too. So I did this commercial, and then after I left the set, I just started bawling. I said, okay, Lord, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it.
Right.
So he was like, you need to create a platform to hear people's stories so people can heal. And I said, oh, okay, well, how am I going to do that? And he said, you need to tell your story, and then people will feel more comfortable to tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wow, how am I going to do that? That's okay. So then I had met with one of my favorite rappers in the Bay Area, and I had asked him, I wanted him to do this theme song for my platform. And so he was like, okay, well, tell me about your life. And so I started telling him about my life, and his mouth was just wide open because he couldn't believe half the stuff that I said, that I shared with him.
Mm.
He was like, wow. So he went home, he made up this song. And he said, we're going to call it Ascending. Mm-hmm. And so the song was like, keep ascending, you keep ascending, you keep ascending. And I said, what does ascending mean? Because I had heard the word descending, mm-hmm. but I never heard the word ascending. So he starts telling me what it meant. And I said, wait a minute, let me go look this up for myself. So I looked the word up, mm-hmm. and I looked it up under like three or four different types of definitions of what it meant. And I said, wow, I really have been ascending my whole life. And it just stuck with me. And I said, wow, this is going to be the name of my platform. Keep Ascending with Toni Rochelle.
Yes.
So I started doing the show. I didn't have a lot of support, so I was using my iPhone. A friend of mine let me use his garage, or just like this little place that he had. I put a black sheet up. The first show that I did was with Keidra on stage, and I actually did that in a studio. The VJ TV studio that I used to work for, they let me use the space.
Nice.
And it was still just like a black sheet in the background. I had all these notes and stuff everywhere. And she sat down and she said yes to me. That was the first thing. She said, yes, Toni, I'll sit down with you and tell you my story. So she sat down, she told me her story, and at the end of her story, I did a monologue off of whatever she told me.
Mm. There you go.
I don't know how I did that. That was nothing but the Lord. Because she tells me her story, and I'm memorizing everything she tells me, and then right off of that, what I gave her back was a monologue of what she just shared with me. And she was like, oh my God, how did you do that? I said, I don't know.
Spirit.
Who did that? And from there, my second guest was the rapper that created the song. Shout out to Jamil. Shout out to Infamous Taz. His rapper name used to be Infamous Taz, but he goes by his government name now, Jamil. And so,
yeah, Jamil Griot.
Yeah. So he tells me his story, and then I did it again, Drea. And then I had another guest, and then I did it again, and then another guest, and then I did it again. And I was like, how am I doing this, Lord? Like, what? How did I know how to say this? How do I even remember this? Like, this is crazy. Like, and I was just so high off of it. Like, I mean, like, if you ever smoked weed before or ever gotten drunk before and you was high off of something, like, I was high off of doing the show. Mm. First of all, you said, yes, you sat with me. Second of all, you told me your story. Third of all, I did this monologue to give it back to you. And the love that they gave me, they were happy. They was like, how did you do that? Like, that was beautiful. How did you remember all this? Like, you put all my life in just in one monologue, just in seconds. And I'm not reading off of a paper or nothing. I'm going off of, because my thing is, if you got the nerve to come and sit with me, I'm about to be present with you.
Yes.
I'm about to be completely present with you. I'm about to take in everything that you got to say to me, and I'm going to throw it back at you, but in a monologue type of way.
I love that.
That's what saved my life. That platform saved my life. It kept me going. It made me feel powerful again. It gave me my wings back. It made me know that I can keep living, not just for my kids, not for my family and my friends, but for Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the platform was, you know, formed. I had stopped doing the platform for a while because I was paying an editor $100 a show to edit the show. And at the time, I was working like a slave. I was working like three jobs, and I just couldn't afford it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that's the only reason why I had stopped doing the platform, because I couldn't do it. But I still kept the brand going. You know, I never gave up the word, because like I said, the word saved my life. And so just recently, 2023 this year, there was a bishop that was watching my show all the way in Africa. And so, you know, the other TV station that I was working for, RTV. Mm-hmm. So at the time when I was doing the shows myself, remember, I was doing it with my phone. And so I was just uploading them to YouTube after the editor used to edit them. Mm-hmm. And so RTV took all those shows from YouTube, and they just kept playing those shows on their station. So more and more people in the community was watching the shows, but these are all the old shows. And so this bishop seen my show, and he was all the way in Africa, and he was like, who is this girl, Toni Rochelle? And why she not doing this show? This show is powerful. Like,
right. This, like, where the new episodes at? Where the new episodes at?
Where she at? Like, does she still exist? You know, he's telling the you know, he's telling the CEO of the network, like, where is he? Shout out to RTV. Shout out to Leonard Stevens. Shout out to Bishop Marone. He was like, well, let me get her on the phone. He's calling me from Africa, Drea. He calls me from, he was like, do you want to do the show? Like, why aren't you doing the show? Like, this is, I've watched your shows over and over, and it's very touching. And I said, well, I just can't afford it, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, what can I do to help you? Like, and I was like, you want to help me? And he's like, yeah. He was like, I could edit the show for you. You could do it in the studio. You know, we won't charge you. Like, your show is meaningful. It's powerful. You need to redo it. And it just was a blessing all over again, because somebody wanted to help me. And so RTV picked it up. I came with a new set. I had a stage. I ascended. I upgraded from the black sheet. I actually had like a monitor behind me with my name on it. It was pink and bright and beautiful, and I was ready to go. It was like I had never left.
Yes.
And I just believe that people still wanted to sit down and talk to me and tell me their story after I have been gone for such, you know, quite amount of time. It's just been history. And this happened this January. So I think I'm on like episode number 17 or something like that. I still have the same format where I talk to people. They tell me their stories. And then I give them the gift. I call it the gift. I give them the gift of the monologue at the end of their story. And when I tell you, each person cries every time they hear the monologue, because they're not even expecting that. They don't know that I'm giving that to them. And then not only do they not know I'm giving that to them, and then like what I really like, I listen to what they say and what I give it back to them. They're like, wow, like they love that part of the show. Like they love it all, but they really love that part of the show. And then God is so good that now I have a radio show. So I have a TV show called Ascending with Toni Rochelle. And then now I have a radio show called Ascending with Toni Rochelle. And the radio show is off of a platform called Believe Radio. Shout out to Believe Radio. It's just been going phenomenal. Like I get so much people telling me that it's helping their lives and that they love the platform and it's just growing. And I don't know what God is going to do with it next, but that's how the platform became.
Yes. And you know, one thing you said, Toni, is that, you know, folks keep helping you. They're not helping. They're investing in you, sis, because they see that spark inside you, that spirit-filled heart and warmth that you have to not just share the vulnerability of your own story, but help others be vulnerable in public.
Wow.
So, yeah, I just, you know, and I hope that, you know, I hope it's thriving and breathing life into you like you're breathing life into the people.
It is, because let me tell you something, I'm still ascending. You know, life is still giving life every day, you know, so don't think that I'm just all perfect and everything is all good. I'm literally living this word every single day. I'm a single mom with two children. I'm living in the Bay Area. Everything is expensive. I haven't had a job in almost a year, you know, and God has still been providing. I'm still happy. I'm still ascending, you know, and so I don't take the platform lightly. And yes, it's helping me. Because when I hear people's stories, I'm like, well, if she did it, if he did it, if he got through this, and if God blessed her and him with that, then I know my time is coming.
Yes, absolutely. And tell the people where they can find Keep Ascending.
I actually changed the name to Ascending with Toni Rochelle instead of Keep Ascending. But I do want y'all to keep ascending. But you can find me on IG at Ascending with Toni Rochelle. You can find me on YouTube at Ascending with Toni Rochelle. At this point, you can Google me at Ascending with Toni Rochelle.
Come on, Google me, baby. Google yourself and Google Toni and support Toni Rochelle, aka Pretty Toni, aka Changemaker.
Aww.
Superwoman storyteller in these streets. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us today, for taking this time to talk with me. Thank you. Thank you.
I love you. I love what you're doing.
Oh, love you back, sis.
And I always admired you in college because you used to be dancing your little telly off. I said, you better go, girl. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it. See, y'all just learned something new about me.
Ooh, I'm telling her business. My bad, y'all. Sorry. She can dance, though, y'all. She can dance.
So Toni's links will be in our show notes. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening and supporting another season. Again, leave a review of the show on Apple Podcasts or in the comments of our social media. This has been another episode of The Black Landscape with Andrea Spearman, where Black excellence is always trending.